Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. It's never an easy call with so many problems in the world to know where to direct the money that you donate when you want to help out in this world. But what I can tell you is that when you donate to CAMH, you're saving lives. We know about the opioid crisis. We know about the mental health crisis. They are doing the work. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help us treat addiction and build hope. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty and a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by frankandoak.com. frankandoak.com is the online destination for guys who want to look sharp and shop smart. Visit frankandoak.com and find a new collection of menswear every month. Fuck 'em. That's what Vice's parliamentary press reporter Justin Ling had to say to the Prime Minister's office in a recent incendiary post titled, "Journalists are banned from the Prime Minister's events and it's stupid nonsense." Okay, well, not exactly. It was a conditional fuck 'em. If, by calling Harper out for banning journalists from his events, results in Justin Ling now getting blacklisted entirely by the PMO, his calls for comment to them and to all the other government offices that send those requests to the PMO, if that is their response to blacklist Justin Ling for calling out this behavior, in that instance specifically, then fuck them. So what prompted this outburst? Justin Ling will be here in a minute to explain. Wait for it. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Greg McMullen, Sam Colbert, Aaron Morissette, Mark Kay, David Stimson, Brian Anderson, MB, Jill Cunningham, and Steve Doherty. Steve, why did you decide to be awesome?
The story that turned me to Canada Land was the Laura Robinson interview. I knew of the story, and until then had prejudged Robinson only because of who published her story. Thanks to Canada Land, I now know differently. Thanks, Jess.
This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We hear a lot about the opioid crisis. We talk a lot about the mental health crisis. These are serious problems. These problems affect us all. They've affected my life and my community. They're not intractable problems. I don't know what's going to solve them on a policy level, but day to day, helping people, that's what CAMH does. They do it on the ground when people need help, and they do it through research. The team at CAMH gave our team a tour of their facilities, and we were really just blown away by the incredible, heroic work that they're doing every day. They treat everyone with dignity, and their research is seeking and finding real solutions for everyone around the world. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind.
Donate at camh.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer, and it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer.
See? This episode of Canada Land is also brought to you by frankandoak.com. frankandoak.com is the online destination for guys who want to look sharp and shop smart. I'm actually just going to go off script for a second to talk about why I'm very happy to have this company as a sponsor of this show. And it helps that I like their clothes and was a customer of theirs before they called me to ask about sponsorship. But I like their story because this is a Montreal-based clothing company that in a few years have become a global menswear brand. And they're still based in Montreal in Mile End, my old neighborhood. And that's a neighborhood of pretty significant historical relevance, both Mile End and the Plateau. That's where the schmata business, the clothing business, the textile business, you wouldn't call it the schmata business, you'd offend people, the needle trade used to be headquartered. And this was an incredibly important industry for Jewish immigrants in Canada. People like my grandmother, who before she was in Winnipeg, came through Montreal and worked in a textile factory in Montreal. And this was sort of a pathway for affluence for Jewish immigrants. Jews right off the boat worked in the factories and later on ran them, owned clothing companies. And then there were economic forces and that whole industry was kind of obliterated. So it is kind of cool to see a company like Frank and Oak come out of that same neighborhood and approach the same industry in a very modern way by using the internet to make it really, really easy for guys to shop online. And how that works is you go to frankandoak.com to discover the latest in stylish, affordable menswear with their monthly on-trend collections. Their Hunt Club service means you can try everything on at home risk-free without the usual anxiety that comes with online shopping. If you really have no idea where to start when it comes to dressing yourself, you can have their stylists send you a box based on your taste and budget. Step up your game stylishly and affordably. Head to frankandoak.com. Use the code CANADALAND to get 20% off your first purchase. The last time I saw you, you were on a panel at a journalism conference where you were arguing that it actually is a good idea for journalists to cozy up to contacts in government, contacts the PMO. Yeah, have a beer with them, make friends. They're not going to like give you anything real or off the cuff. You're going to have to let them try to spin you. You're going to have to let them feed you information. But it's really, you argued, the only way, because our access to government as journalists right now is at an all-time low, and you were making a case for that. Now you come out with this piece in Vice saying, and there's a quote, "No more of this bullshit. I'm done."
Yeah.
What happened?
So I went from being, I was kind of an apologist. And you know what? I still will defend that to a degree, right? I mean, I for years got good stories thanks to friends of mine in the various offices of ministers, in the PMO, in the party. And there's nothing inherently bad about that. In a well-working system, that happens all the time. In a system that is healthy, that's okay. The problem is that propagating the bastardization of the Ottawa bubble that we're now at? And after doing that panel, I kind of came around to the conclusion that, yeah, it is. I'm actively contributing to evil.
Because, you know, to follow it through, there is official messaging and, you know, huge barriers on what gets out there and what the official party line is and what they'll respond to and what they won't. And then if you get something through one of your contacts, that's no accident, right? You're playing a game where they're saying, okay, well, let's give this one to this guy.
Yeah, to a degree, yeah. So like I've had contacts that I've gone to when I was a freelancer and I've said, listen, I know this happened. I know you guys gave a contract to this. And there's two examples, one of them being Uganda. I said, I'm pretty sure you guys are giving money to pro-gay charity groups in Uganda. It's a good story for you guys. do you want to help me out and help me prove this? It's a story about how Canada is doing good fighting for gay rights in Uganda. And my contact says, I think we can do that. And then he produces emails, just sends me a raft of emails saying, here's all the evidence you need. And I wrote that story.
Yeah.
Like, those stories are still worthwhile. Those stories will always be worthwhile. And if my sources still want to do that for me, sure, I'll do that. But the problem is, and it's always kind of subconscious, are you taking that and thus shutting up about how bad the system is? And it's a sort of self-censorship, right? Where you're saying, well, it's working for me right now, so I don't have the need to come out and say this whole system is a fucking farce.
Yeah.
So
– you're getting stories that other people don't have, which is what you're trying to do. You're breaking something. But that kind of source journalism only works when it's something that flatters the government, right? That's not going to – the idea of having a buddy at a bar who has a few too many and actually tells you something he's not supposed to or that she's not supposed to, That does happen. I was just going to say it's pretty rare.
So I had a source in the government, a very high level source, who gave me a story about a year ago in the budget. They came and said, listen, did you read the budget? I said, yes. They go, did you read this part? I said, yes. Did you see anything about in this case, it was a COA being the East Coast Development Body. And they have like a kind of a tangential relationship with the ECBC, which is this is a very regional story. But the Cape Breton,
what relationship with the ECBC?
They had a tangential relationship.
Okay.
So a COA kind of indirectly works with ECBC, which manages Cape Breton, but because Cape Breton is an economic dumpster fire, they have their own economic body. So they've always been separate. And this source of mine says, did you see anything about ECBC in the budget? I'm like, well, not really, but yeah, I guess I didn't. And they said, well, okay, read it again. So I kind of got back and they kept poking me. I had a couple conversations with them over the phone the day after. And I'm like, oh shit, is the government going to kill ECBC? And that source says, yes, we are. And I don't like it. So, you know, this stuff does happen. You do get people in government who are feeding you stuff that is not necessarily friendly. And this does happen. But this is almost
going off the leash a little bit.
Yeah. And that happens. And that's really great.
Yeah.
But it's almost it's like an antibody for the current system we have. It's rogue cells trying to kill the cancerous tumor that is the PMO.
And you're still with this change of heart that you become a part of the problem by playing that game.
Yeah.
So why the change of heart?
You know what? It's been festering in my head for a while, and I kind of go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And there was a point at which I was at a PMO event in Nepean, just outside Ottawa. The PM never does events in Ottawa. He does events for Remembrance Day. He does events when foreign dignitaries visit. He rarely, if ever takes questions.
By events, you mean press events?
Yeah. They call them open media availabilities, but they're rarely that. More often than not, they're photographer and video camera only.
Let's think about that for a second.
Yeah.
He invites the press, but not reporters.
Yes.
Only if you're going to take his picture.
Yes.
And the press goes, okay. And then they send in their photographers.
For a while, we tried to fight it. People, you know, my predecessors in the press gallery tried to fight it. They really did push back. And there's been various strongly worded letters written here and there. And there's been attempted boycotts. And there's been back and forths. It doesn't work. They just keep doing it. They kind of just say, you know what? You can either have the footage from the event or you cannot have it. And it's either or. There's no compromise that allows print journalists in. You either have the footage or you don't. And at the end of the day, you know, not to demean TV reporters because they just have a different beast to feed. They have to say yes. They are pressured into saying yes. The PMO bends their arm until they say yes.
So A, it doesn't work. And B, it actually gives the conservatives fodder where they go off and raise money saying, oh, the press is boycotting us. The press is out to get us. You need to give us money.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, I think Stephen Harper gains more from having a story about him going after the media than he gains from having the media actually cover him. So
yeah.
I've written this a bunch of times. You know,
no, we talked about it before. This is sort of the stalemate that things have been at for a long time.
Yeah.
So you were at this event in Nepean that was only for photographers and camera people.
Well, no, so this was one of the rare open media events.
Oh, I'm sorry. You were allowed to be there.
Exactly.
To ask questions?
Well, and that was the assumption I had. So 4 to 5 emails you get from the PMO are photographer or video camera only. And in Ottawa, there hasn't been an open media availability for photographers, video cameras, journalists, radio reporters, you know, columnists in forever. It is Remembrance Day, where there's no questions allowed, and when a foreign dignitary comes to visit. So I said, fuck, you know, it's a half-hour drive, but I'm going to go. So I got in the car and I drove out and I was like, okay, what am I going to ask? I actually came to the conclusion I was going to ask about why we're not giving weapons to the Kurds. Like I really want to go and ask like dumb policy questions and not go with the weird political story.
Well, just because you have such little opportunity to do so, I guess you
may as well ask something that's going to betray something he actually knows.
Yeah.
Evidently, the the prime minister has made the decision not to do this, and we're not going to find out about it any other way other than asking him. So when you have the opportunity to ask him, you may as well. So I get in the car, drive out, and it's in this big high school gymnasium. I'm there a bit late. I ended up in the back of the room, and you're you know, in behind this rope. There's all these supporters in front of you, and then the PM is way off in the distance on a podium. And I'm just kind of looking around, coming to the conclusion there's no questions that are going to be asked here. He's going to speak. We're going to be given the speech after he's done speaking. We're supposed to transcribe what he said and go report it, and then we're going to be ushered out of the room. And so I was like, okay, do I yell a question? Do I try to sneak into the crowd? So I took my badge off and tried to go under the rope. And within a hot second, a PMO staffer was pointing me out, and a security guard came over and said, you need to put your pass back on. You also need to leave. And there's a point I'm like, this is farcical. And I said some snarky comments to the PMO staffers that I knew there, and they kind of shrugged and said, this is how it is. And it was that point where I was like, this is screwed up. Like, there's something fundamentally wrong about this. So, and you know, this all kind of, you know, hit me when a little while ago a bunch of Alberta reporters got severely mishandled at an event with the Prime Minister and the Premier of Alberta at the Calgary Stampede.
Can you tell me what happened there?
Yeah, so the initial release said photographers only, and you know, those enterprising, doe-eyed Alberta reporters who are used to a normal communications policy went out and decided to use their iPhone. So a bunch of print reporters said, yeah, okay, we'll just go and take some pictures on our iPhone and we'll be photographers. And the PMO said, no, iPhones are not cameras. You can't do that. But you can come in. You can come into the event, no problem. So there was a bit, and that was after some pressure on Twitter and whatnot, and there, hey, it looked like a capitulation. Except after that, the PMO said, actually, no, nobody's allowed. You're all banned. And so all of these print reporters were told straight up, you are not allowed to come to this event. You are banned because there's a danger you could ask a question. And like, it's just a stark reminder of how fucked the system is that made me go, like, I'm done. Next time this happens, and this is a solemn promise to all my friends in the PMO, I'm going to be going to a lot more PMO events and asking questions until you drag me out. Because, like, this is fucked. Like, I don't recognize the authority of the PMO to tell me when I can and can't do my job. So go fuck yourselves.
Okay, Justin. I mean, you wrote of your peers, we've all just given up at this point. That might as well just be in our pajamas eating, like, Chunky Monkey out of, like, you know, we're just not doing our jobs anymore. And so you're I mean, that's pretty harsh. I'm not saying it ain't true.
Oh, so it's not that we're not doing our job. Like, we are all doing our job, and I think most people in the press gallery are doing a very good job. But we're missing a big component of it. Like, there's a big, you know, obvious gap in our coverage, which is the Prime Minister, and it's just, we're just not doing it, and it's not... I guess it's partly our fault that we let it get to this point. That's a collective responsibility. But it's, you know, it's not like we can be really held to blame for, you know, the obvious, you know, misdeeds of the Prime Minister's office. Yeah, we've given up on that front. We do a lot of other stuff really well. On this front, we've totally failed.
Yeah, and you write a really kind of compelling anecdote about, you know, one of the only times that he will actually let the press ask questions is when visiting heads of state or dignitaries are in, because it doesn't look good because it's so wildly out of whack with international standards of availability. So just tell me the one about when the Australians were in
town. It's so telling that they know what they're doing is wrong, because the only time we get to ask questions is when a foreign head of state comes in, but only an elected head of state. If it's a not elected head of state, we don't have to ask questions, which is kind of this hilarious, like...
You don't get to ask questions.
Yeah. So if, you know, the King Sultan of Saudi Arabia shows up, the Prime Minister's office gets to say, oh, no, we have the same communications policy, so you don't get any questions.
Right.
But if there's an elected...
So if it's a fellow tyrant or a despot, it's like, okay, no questions. We're down. We're simpatico.
I didn't realize this, because this is an unwritten policy, but we only get to ask questions if it's a fellow elected head of state.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that bears out if you go through it all?
Yeah.
So Australia was in town.
So it was pretty early in the morning. I got there a little early. There's only a handful of us. And the general MO when there's a foreign head of – when one of these events actually happens, when the rare opportunity we get to ask questions in Ottawa happens, we all kind of get into a huddle and say, okay, who wants to ask the question? What do you want to ask? So on and so on. So you get one English, one French. And so I said –
You're like survivors on an island, and there's like four little nuggets of food. So you've got to ration it out.
Yeah, I figure out which ones we're going to eat first.
Yeah.
And so it was right after C-36 comes out. So I say I want to ask a question about sex work. Evidently, and I was like, there's a bit of a
Bell C-36 had just come out.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm like, he's sharing a stage with the guy who runs a country that has half decriminalized sex work, and it's working relatively well
in Australia.
Yes, and so maybe there's a good question to be had of, you know, how isn't it weird for you to stand on the stage and say sex work is an inherent evil and it's going to destroy the country when you're sharing the stage with a guy who has a very different experience. So they said, yeah, yeah, that's a good question. Let's do that. So I'm there sitting in like the back of this room watching them do their little speeches and getting, like prepping my question. And the Australian journalist, because they get two as well, leans over the aisle and says like, hey, listen, is this normal that you guys only get to ask two questions? And I looked at him and I said, no, actually, we usually don't get any at all. And he says, I'm like, no, I'm being quite serious. This is actually, we don't get any questions.
Yeah.
He's like, how did this happen? Like, how do we get, like, how did, I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. This is the way it is. Our communications policy is insane.
Yeah. So you're mad as hell and you're not going to take it anymore.
That's the general idea. You know what? I've been thinking about that movie a lot lately, Network 1976. One of my favorite movies. But this is the big danger. And like, I find that story is a cautionary tale. So the story is about this disgruntled old broadcaster who ends up taking to the airwaves and doing this long rant about, you know, I'm mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore. And there's a part where he says, you know, I wouldn't tell you to email your congresspeople because I wouldn't know what to tell you. I don't know what to do about inflation. I don't know what to do about the Ruskies. All I can tell you is that you have to get mad and then hopefully shit changes. But and then everyone remembers that part of the movie. But what happens later in that movie is that he becomes this symbol of anger and he becomes like
demagogue, media kind of guru who's losing his mind and being exploited by the network heads.
Yeah, so spoiler alert, but you know the movie's 40 years old, I guess.
Does he drop dead on the air? I can't remember.
Yeah, he gets shot at the end.
He gets shot.
And so it's kind of, and there's a pretty good cautionary tale of, you know, you don't also want to be this like prophesizer whose entire job is just to go out and just rant and rave.
Because, don't become the story, Justin. Not supposed to become the story.
Well, there's a danger of that. I think we can become the story in a responsible way, but I don't want to go out there and like start campaigning for Thomas Mulcair, Justin Trudeau, because those bastards are going to be just as bad as Harper is if they were to win. I genuinely believe that. I think this has to be like a pretty, I think it has to be us standing on principle as opposed to just ranting and raving like a mad person.
I think we can even say like, you know, it's not even necessary to call them bastards. It's just like that's their job. Their job is to be held in good favor by the public. Their job is to sell their policies and to keep their approval ratings up and to get reelected. So anybody in that role, it is their job to keep the press as far from scrutinizing them as possible, arguably. And it's our job to push the other way. How have people in the parliamentary press gallery, how have your colleagues in the media responded to, I mean, you know, you published this recently and it had a big response. It got widely shared. What's the blowback been or the feedback?
You know what? Everybody's been pretty receptive. All the journalists I've talked to, save a couple, Dave Aiken had a couple of choice words about it. He's definitely more on the camp that we earn all of our own coverage and that, you know, it's not the PMO's job to give us this the leash, and that's a fair, I guess, perspective. But everyone else has been pretty receptive. I was on a radio in Calgary, and all of the emails and calls in to the studio were, you know, a lot of the you liberal media, you think you owe, you know, the Prime Minister owes you something, good for him. But generally speaking, the reception has been pretty good. I think it encapsulates what people have been saying in bars and in events for forever, and I guess people just needed a form where you get to say fuck.
Yeah. It's funny how people respond as this is the media whining, the media acting entitled, the media thinks that it's owed something. You're the representatives of the public's right to know. So it's, you're there saying, no, everybody needs to know this. Like, these questions that you have are just like basic policy questions that are not going to come out naturally from their messaging. They need to be elicited.
Yeah.
And yet – I am reminded of my conversation with Chantal Hebert where I brought up just this very scenario. And she said, you know what? Like I walk through a park and I see a man, an old man feeding pigeons. And that reminds me of when we did have these press events.
Yeah.
When Trudeau would give so many press events and he would pick which reporter to ask and he would answer the question that he wanted to answer, not the question that was asked. And she says, and this is what she told me, I have not seen any prime minister give regular news conferences that were not to his advantage, including Brian Mulroney, who used to give regular ones. So it doesn't matter whether you're on the spectrum, doesn't matter how much access they give, they only give access if they think it's going to work out for them.
Yeah, but you know what? That's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, you know, I don't want to go into a briefing with the prime minister to make him look bad. I want to go into the briefing with the prime minister to tell a story or to report a story. And if that makes him look bad in the process, so be it.
The Australia question makes him look bad. I mean, it's true. If people we should talk about that, but that would make him look bad.
But I mean, it was
real stories make.
Yeah, sure.
If it's a real story, it's going
to
make them.
But
look
it was a question, not a statement, right? Like I wasn't there to tell him he was wrong. I was there to ask him to defend himself.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, the story still was Australia has this. Canada is refusing it. And in that case, I got to incorporate defense of the prime minister to explain why he thought so. And did the story make him look bad? Maybe. Would it have made him look worse if he didn't answer? Yeah. Because when you have a one-sided conversation, you're not telling the full story. And I think the prime minister deserves to have his rebuttal in this and deserves to be able to tell why he enacted this policy in the first place. I think you know, part of the argument has to be to these parties to tell them, listen, you get better coverage when you deal with us. It won't always be good coverage, but it'll be better coverage. And I think that is part of the equation. There's going to be briefings where, you know, journalists are going to ask really softball questions to the PM and he's going to get a chance to talk about himself a bit and it's going to make him look good. There's also going to be scrums and events where you ask really tough questions and they're forced to admit that they're an idiot about something. And this happens in scrums all the time. You know, you go into scrums and you have super softball questions of like, somebody asked Peter McKay the other day, what is your legacy going to be? That's going to be a chance for Peter McKay to talk about his legacy.
Right.
But, and this is actually really, really interesting. In the answer to that question, he said, you know, I hope part of my legacy with you guys is that you remember that every day after question period, or almost every day, time permitting, I walked up these steps and I took one or two questions every day, if not more. I didn't take Coward's Alley. And it was like a big dig at a bunch of the other ministers who every day go through a back door in the House of Commons and don't ever see media. And
that is kind of a slap at his colleagues, isn't it?
Yeah, it was super interesting. Wow. It was him saying, you know, I come out here every day, and sometimes those stories he gets asked, he has to admit that the government policy, like, you know, he has to reveal a bit of government policy that we can then go and report. In some cases, he makes a gaffe, which is fun for the political reporters. And sometimes he gets to defend himself, which is just good for the government all around. It's a mixed bag, and that's what's true about every press conference and scrum and briefing and what have you. And just – it's not about what we get from it. It's about the infrastructure of how this is supposed to work, and you can't just destroy this infrastructure and say – fuck it, like, I'm doing it my way. You know, this is part of the democratic institution. I was on radio in Halifax talking about a story, and I made the point, you know, this isn't yours to play with. One of the founders of responsible government in Canada, one of the guys who really made government accountable, was Joseph Howe, who was a media baron who was like who published a tabloid in Halifax and who later went on to, you know, craft the system we currently have in Canada, where newspapers and media are part of the democratic institutions we tend to hate. But begrudgingly hate.
That's, you know, interesting that reality was won by the press. You know, that it's something that it's our job to advocate for that and keep that alive.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, this isn't just about our vanity. It's definitely a bit about that. I think every journalist has a bit of an ego. But this sounds pompous, but it's a part of our democracy. And when the prime minister, you know, just shuts that down, that's a problem in the long run, and it spells trouble for how our system is supposed to work.
You bring up an interesting point, which is that, like, it's – I don't know. I don't want to say this definitively, but I always argue this when people are just not giving comment. Like, it's always better for you to call me up. And just in the sense that it's harder to, like, really write something that's damning if you've had a conversation with a person where they've tried to explain themselves and they haven't been hiding everything. If somebody's just not returning your calls, the way that they exist in your mind is like, my job is to bring out – is to tell the public the truth. This person is an obstacle in my way. I'm not going to let them. And that does influence what you write, you know? Even if the situation is a messy one, an embarrassing one, I like to think that it's in their interest to talk with us. And then there's another voice in my head that says, yeah, but they can kill a lot of stories by not talking to you, because there's a lot of times when if you don't get comment from them, you can't get confirmation, you can't get anything, it doesn't get past an editor.
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, you know, those damning stories that don't have comment, they're, I think, in every situation from every journalist only half true, because you're never going to get a full story without talking to somebody directly involved in it.
Then they always come out anyhow once it's out.
Exactly.
Once it's out, okay, now I'm going to come. Well, why wouldn't you
talk? That's all media strategy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's all – if you can discredit the journalist who wrote the original story, you're going to have a better leg up in defending yourself.
Yeah, that happens too.
Yeah. And I think that's part of what all of that is. But at the end of the day, I think actually having comment in that story has – the potential to tell a full story, or at least 75% of it or 90% of it or what have you. And the conservatives just don't seem to get that. They are in a bunker mentality of, we'll go to war with you over the story and we will fight you and go back and forth with you and we'll shut you out and then break you down and then destroy you.
Yeah.
As opposed to saying, okay, you know what? We're not going to get a fair shake in the story, but we can get a fairer shake. We can get a better coverage by giving you this.
Yeah. I think what Chantal Lebert was getting at, and also I think what your friend and colleague Paul McLeod was getting at that same panel is, what do you expect? You're not going to get such great stuff from these press conferences anyhow, from these scrums. Stories don't lie there. Stories lie in other places. You got to go out and find them. You got to go through a lot of paper. You got to do FOIs. Like, that's where we're failing. And this is sort of like a phony battle of, like, the press gallery versus the PMO. That, like, yeah. Really, we need to be, you know, pounding the pavement a bit more.
Well, he's definitely not wrong, but I don't think anybody – well, I'm not saying that this is a be-all, end-all. This is not an ends to a means. This is just a step in the process, right? You know, when I work up a story and get to, you know, almost ready to publish and I just don't have any conservative voices in it, or I don't have that crucial affirmative, confirm, deny, or any of that, like, the story suffers. So it's not that I'm going to go out there and build a story from a scrum with the PM, but it's going to help the story I'm already working on, which is always my strategy in scrums. I take a story and then I go to a scrum and ask a minister about it and see what they say. And it sometimes works really well. So that story I wanted to ask the PM about sending weapons to the Kurds in Syria and Iraq, I ended up scrumming Kenny about it, the defense minister. So I asked him and I pushed him and I pushed him and I pushed him in the scrum. I asked him like three different times why we're not doing this. And eventually he comes out and says, listen, we don't have any weapons. We actually don't have all of our stockpiles are empty. We don't have any weapons.
Right.
There you go. And that was the story.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can get stories this way.
You can get it. Huh?
You just need them to give you the information they have in their head.
So is that what you're going to do? How are you going to get stories now that you've kind of, you know, thrown down the gauntlet, basically?
Oh, well, I mean, you know, there's always ways to get stories. I think, and so on that panel, Alex Boulier from The Star was talking about his own ways of just avoiding the government altogether and going and A-tipping and FOIing and digging through contract archives and all this. And it works really well. I mean, I've always done that. I've always tried to, like, augment it with some of that, you know, reaction journalism and some of the scrum journalism and all that. But, you know, like, I've spent the past couple weeks going through, like, a bunch of WikiLeaks troves about Saudi Arabia and France and all this.
Yeah.
And I still have a lot of A-tip to come back. And we're doing stories on, you know, all sorts of intelligence and privacy and stuff like that. And I'm going to do a couple of this in the near future about these big secretive trade deals we've been signing on to that no one really knows about.
TPP and the...
Trade and TISA, the Trade and Services Agreement, which is the one no one knows about.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you'll come back and talk about that. We haven't gotten there yet. You're going to pay a price for this, though. I mean, you wrote in the piece, there's a good chance that by writing this, my future calls to the PMO will go unanswered. If so, fuck them.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's a bit – and I think somebody – no one said this yet, and I'm not sure why no one has. There's a bit of safety in me writing this now because, you know, we're in the twilight of this government.
Yeah.
Even if they get reelected, it's going to be the end of the Harper era in a very short period of time. So, you know – the real brave thing would have been for me to do this a year ago and then live with the consequences.
So why didn't you?
I don't know.
Because it was a year ago?
I don't think I was ready to do this then. I think back then it was still working for me and it wasn't – and like the level of disgust hadn't risen that high yet, and it just so happens that it is now. I mean, if we still had a year left in this government, I think I still would have done it now. But
yeah.
Yeah.
It feels like you found your voice. And I remember when you took the job, for Vice, being Vice's man in Ottawa, it occurred to me like, oh, like, and I think that a lot of people are paying attention, like Vice is different. This might be something different here. And I'll generalize this to a lot of the amazing hires that Vice has made recently, where they're getting a lot of young, really smart reporters and building up a lot of capabilities as a serious news organization and giving them a lot of rein to cover what they want. My only, I don't know, criticism, observation is I was like, wow, this is great. I want to see a different tone to serious news coverage in Canada. And the news stories have been good, but they've been written in a tone that up until recently, up until like this story you just wrote, I don't want to read that original Vice tone, but I also don't want to read like CP style.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, you know what? And here's part of the problem in doing something that no one else does, which is what I think we strive to do in most cases, is that we're writing stories that just aren't on the radar. And there's a problem where traditional media, the legacy guys, aren't picking some of these stories up. Like, you know, a couple of months ago, there's a...
So do you feel like it's got to sound like a traditional news story in order to be taken seriously?
No, I actually don't think that's the problem at all. I think the problem is that the stories that we're writing that aren't, you know, are not quite CP style, but are also interesting and in-depth and investigative and cleverly written and all this just aren't being read as much as some of our other stuff. And I think
– yeah.
So, you know
– and should you even care about that? I mean the whole point of Vice as a news organization is that young people don't read the news and here's news that young people are going to read. I care. Like I want – if I'm investigating something, if I'm breaking something, I want it to have pickup. And I think that the people who support the show are supporting it in part because they want, you know, stories that otherwise wouldn't get – on the radar to go beyond just this podcast and the website. But is that a concern for Vice? Like, I mean, I guess like anybody you care.
Yeah,
if
you always want to pick up. And like, you know, we wrote a story about how Canada was shipping off big light armored vehicles, kind of tanks to Kuwait. When that story was about Saudi Arabia, when the Globe reported it, everyone went bonkers on it and everyone was picking it up. When we did it, it didn't really get any traction, but the story was like a good friggin' story. And I don't know, we do a lot of that. We have a lot of like really good stuff. We have, you know, people digging into First Nations issues, environmental issues, and all this. And I think they're written really well. I mean, are we still trying to find our voice a little bit? Yeah, for sure. I think everyone still is, especially a lot of startups. You're trying to figure out exactly how you want to phrase it and how you want to make it look and whether and how much you want to emulate the old guys and how much you want to strike out a totally new tone in uncharted territory.
Well, that's what you just did. And I have to imagine that's a deliberate decision. When you write a piece that says, hey, fuck the PMO, or if this happens, fuck them, that's something that you think about and you talk about with your editor. So, I mean
– yeah, but this is a column though, right? I mean, how much do you want to play with the traditional – I mean, screw the inverted pyramid. If you're not a J-school student, the inverted pyramid is this thing that, you know, J-school has created eons ago to explain how you should write a hard news piece where you put all the important stuff at the top. And then and it's really antiquated. It's how Canadian press writes all their stories. It's a really antiquated model. I mean, do we want to throw that out altogether? Do we want to play with it? Do we want to change it? When we're writing hard news stories, normal, you know, investigative stories, do we want to write it like that? Do we want to write it differently? And that's still something I think we're playing with, and I think a lot of people are playing with. This is just a different thing altogether. This is a column where I curse a bunch and get angry and make jokes, and I think this is a different thing. I can't do a story about selling weapons to Saudi Arabia like this style. It would be weird.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny, though. I mean, we have all these distinctions in our head. I think the reader just – it's a new story from Bucks.
Yeah, yeah, but I think also the reader is so tuned out of that Canadian press model. I think you definitely have to play with it. I think you have to write your stories a bit differently. And
yeah.
I think it's just – It's we spend decades building that style, and now we're trying to break it down in the course of a couple months and just figuring out what people like to read, and it's different. It's a weird thing to play with.
You know, beyond this being sort of the twilight of the Harper era, we're moving into election season. Well, we're in election season.
Yeah.
So now the power dynamic shifts a little bit, and especially how they're doing in the polls, they need us more than they ever did. So is this why it's a good time to flex?
I think that's optimistic. Actually, you know what? You hear these guys who have done four or five campaigns, and you start to think that the media control on the campaigns is worse than it is during government. They're more – because, I mean, think about it. When you're dealing with a Prime Minister of Canada event, there's still like a tiny beat of humanity left in these people where they say, okay, you know what? You can ask three or four questions at this event in Markham or whatever. And because it has all the pomp and circumstance of a taxpayer-funded event, there's a level of, I don't know, decorum to it. When it's a partisan Conservative Party event, that all goes out the window. They're more
on their turf,
yeah.
and they're fighting a war.
They're more likely to say, you know what, we pick who gets to ask the question. You have to submit your questions to us, or you get no questions at all, or you're going to be, you know, tasered if you try to get out of line here. Like, a lot of that goes – and like, you know, remember a couple of years ago, last campaign, Terry Maleski asked a question of the Prime Minister about media control, and the crowd boos him into submission. Like, that's the sort of game we're playing with right now.
How is this stuff communicated, submit your questions in advance? Are there emails? Like, is it
– I've never actually had it happen to me. They've never tried it on me. I think that
policy – I mean,
that
alone should be a story. Like, if there's paper on that, then that should be a story every time it happens.
As far as I know, that hasn't happened. I think it's happened on a couple of his foreign trips. I don't know to what extent. I'd love to see someone write about that. But I think this is the one big victory we won a couple of years ago where the journalist said, listen, this is a bridge too far. You know, we're going to burn down the village if this happens. So, you know, kudos to the press gallery for winning that battle. But I haven't seen that happen. I know people always talk about that. No one's ever asked me to submit questions like that for a Scrum or a press conference.
All right, Justin Lin, go on with your bad self.
Yeah, we'll try to.
Thanks, man.
Cool.
Okay, that was your Canada Land show. I hope you enjoyed it. You can email me always at jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read every email you send. I respond when I can. I'm on Twitter at Jesse Brown. The website is canadalandshow.com. There are new articles going up all the time. The crowdfunding site is patreon.com/canadaland. I make this show with Katie Jensen. Canada Land Commons is up on Tuesday. A new episode of Canada Land Shortcuts will be online Thursday. If you like this show, please support it. Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this.
It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.